thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to talk to crop scientists. I've been a crop scientist all my life, actually, starting with breeding and transplanting in the field of rice, for example, here. But what's fascinating, essentially, about the problems nowadays is that they are very complex problems, and one has to look at a simple thing as a response of a plant to the environment in multiple ways. And so what it means is you're looking at a systems-level view of what is happening to a crop. So that's essentially the title of my talk. I'm talking about rice productivity traits in general that can be just for production under normal conditions and also under stress conditions. So in a very far-out way, a dream view, that's what this is, a very hazy picture. The goal would be to increase grain yield, and that's essentially the real holy grail of plant biology, to increase grain yield, to environmental stresses. In spite of different environmental stresses, to have enough grain yield. One of the ways would be to identify what are the different pathways to which subscribe to grain yield, and to integrate all of that, one has to look at it in terms of some way in which you could get all these information, like in a network approach. Especially in human diseases and all, the network approach has been proven to be very useful for solving very complex systems. Then look at what are the different potential ways you could improve grain yield. One of them we identified was photosynthesis, and I'll show you some examples of that. And in order to be able to study these changes in a very discrete level, we've been using mutants to knock out mutants, have knockouts over expression lines, and see changes in grain yield and other environmental stress interactions. And finally, to see what is there in nature, we looked at an association analysis of productivity traits in rice and integrated that data into networks in order to be able to get a better handle on it. So starting at rice, essentially, the important part in rice is the inflorescence, the reproductive stage. That's where you get the seed. And that's the part which is most affected in stresses like both heat and drought. And if you look at what the pathways are, they are very common in different cereals. At the time of gamete formation, there is a necessity of sugars and availability of that will allow the gametes then to form, and also that means in pollen grains, and also then the zygote to develop further. So looking at the reproductive stage in inflorescence, we asked ourselves what happens during drought stress and compared it then to the flag leaf. Here's an example in which we did RNA-seq analysis, and this all has been represented in MacMan in rice. What you see primarily is out here. So red designates the down-regulation, blue is up-regulation. A large amount of genes are down-regulated involved in photosynthesis. There are also other parts, cell wall, there's also carbon metabolism, and then secondary metabolism. What turns out that one of the important factors is that carbon metabolism is affected very much by drought stress. So we looked at what regulates carbon metabolism. To be able to get to it, we developed networks, and in this case, we're looking at a factor, what are the transient factors which regulate these processes. So when you want to look at networks, you see a regulation of a master regulator, let's say a transient factor, downstream genes, and they all are involved in certain modules. So in order to get these modules which are responsible for drought, we made regulatory gene association networks, and I'll describe them a bit more, in which what objective was to find out regulators of processes like, for example, photosynthesis, of carbohydrate metabolism, of abiotic stress responses. So looking at our gene expression data, we saw that just a simple thing like drought can perturb the whole system, including photosynthesis. So perturbation is very important in understanding networks. Using that, we can then find out what are the regulatory processes involved. So we got together all the public data which is available, this is a few years ago, in terms of microarray data of rice. So number of samples in response to some environmental conditions. We made our own annotations to get the affymetrix arrays to be gene-specific. And we made a co-expression network called RECON, which has about 35,000 genes and 18.5 million edges. That means there's a large amount of connectivity between them. And we then divide them to dense clusters in which these modules, which are then all in some sort of a system in which you could find out what is the certain regulatory effect driving such a system. So we got these drought response genes in three stages and studied them in terms of what is affecting at vegetative stage, reproductive stage, and also like flag leaf. So this is an example of a cluster, a module, in which in blue is shown genes which are upregulated during drought. And what you see is in this cluster, which most of these genes have some common relationship to each other, they're regulated similarly, they have got potential transcription factors driving their regulation. Here we find some drought tolerance genes as potential regulating this particular cluster. And you also find other genes which, for example, are in white, which are not differentially regulated, which also have a potential role because they then are just present, but they're not differentially regulated. So you've got to see genes also which are present in a particular system as well as those which are differentially regulated. So we designed then a particular network system in which we asked what are the regulatory genes affecting carbohydrate metabolism and photosynthesis-related processes. So these are the GO categories in terms of productivity type of processes. And related to that, from our expression network, we took out a number of transcription factors. Here, these are about 35 transcription factors from the AP2ERF transcription factor family. They're mostly involved in stress. That's why we took those. And we asked in terms of what we say called Z-scores, that is the relationship association, a high association or a low association of transcription factors to these particular processes. For example, the ones which are out here have higher association. So there are many transcription factors here which have higher association to all of these. But there was only one out here which had association to all these photosynthetic processes and carbohydrate metabolic processes. And that gene happened to be a gene called HIGHER. That was the beginning of our search for the functions of HIGHER. HIGHER is a drought-induced AP2ERF transcription factor that has positive correlations with all these processes. So we studied this further. We made a transgenic plant, or many transgenic plants, in a few different genotypes. What HIGHER did was it overexpressed certain pathways. One of the things what we see is that HIGHER had greener leaves and large number of chlorophyll and chloroplasts. In the flag leaf, HIGHER conferred higher number of, HIGHER is an alliteration of the word, increased number of starch granules. Then we looked at a dose rate relationship. If we increase, for example, the light intensity of the HIGHER expressing plants. What we see out here are different higher lines, wild type in blue, and different higher lines. As we increase the light intensity, the photosynthesis increases. That means the higher lines have high photosynthetic capacity, which is not completely used up with the particular level of carbon dioxide which we give, or light intensity which we give. That means it has more potential. Exactly, we see if we increase the carbon dioxide, also higher lines produce more photosynthesis products. And that's all seen in the phenotypes. We compare them, the wild type, to different higher lines in well-watered conditions and under drought. These are pot experiments, about 1 liter pot, 45 day old plants. Higher lines do have increased photosynthesis. Under normal conditions and under drought, they also have increased biomass compared to wild type and sucrose. So we have therefore a number of traits which are physiologically important for a plant, at least the vegetative traits, which are increased. We also see that higher regulates a number of genes, which that is, when we use the higher transgenic plants, we looked at genes which could give us an explanation for why we get all these phenotypes. So higher regulated number of genes like involved in grain number, I'll show you afterwards that it does that too, in tillering, lateral branching, panicle development, and grain filling. So higher was giving us overexpression of downstream genes, which we predicted from our data, others which we did not predict. What you see also is higher lines have got increased and thicker roots. This is in just grown in liquid media. Grown in the soil too, you have then enlarged cortex, more parenchyma, the higher lines. This is a cross-section out here. So the number of roots, the root biomass, have all increased. So this is one of the aspects you'd expect also when you have, let's say, water use efficiency. That's what higher lines also had. Okay, all that is fine. The physiological processes are good. This shows that when you go systematically to try to improve these particular processes, you need a large number of genes to be co-regulated. And what higher does is that, being a sort of a master regulator, it potentially regulates number of downstream genes involved in all these processes. Because what had been suggested is, in case you need to modify certain complex systems like photosynthesis, grain yield, it's not going to come only with one gene, one effect. So you have got to look up in the hierarchy of a system. So what we searched and found was, at least in this case, higher, which is up in the hierarchy of the regulatory system, increasing the effect on multiple different pathways and therefore potentially different regulatory genes downstream. So higher increased the yield in Nipponbare under well-watered conditions. This is on well-watered conditions, number of parameters a year of yield, and also under drought conditions. So increase about 20 to 30% yield under well-watered conditions and 15 to 30% yield in reproductive drought conditions. So drought time stress was given. So Nipponbare is a model plant for rice. It's like the Columbia for Arabidopsis. We use IR64, which is one of the most adapted rice grown all across Asia. We transformed it, my collaborator at Louisiana, Niranjan Baisak, and his group transformed it. And even IR64 has increased grain yield, 18% increase in grain yield per panicle, and 28% increase in drought. So independent of a genotype, higher regulates in multiple pathways in at least what we see in conditions which we have, controlled conditions in the greenhouse. We can't yet go with transgenic plants to the field. We'd like to, but anyway, we try to use as good a system that could replicate the field. What we also see is that higher doesn't only give you stress tolerance in terms of drought, it also gives you heat tolerance. So we treated Nipponbare expressing the higher plants for high day and night temperature. The night temperature is important. 26 degrees is already high. This is for the whole period of growth. We see that the yield of both the higher, of course, is increased. That's in green. And the higher under stress in red. And what you also see is that it's known that rice, when it develops, the grain develops under high nighttime temperature, it has very chalky grain, so poor grain quality. So higher had improved the grain quality. Here you see less chalkiness. This wild type is very chalky. Compared to the control, it's not chalky. And this has got slightly less chalkiness. it's shown out here higher. It's got less chalkiness than the normal. So the take-home lesson had been that rice, taken as a temperate plant, with 1 degree increase in minimal night temperature, had a 10% decrease in grain yield. And so looking at this forward for the global climate change purposes, would be interesting to see how we can bolster that particular problem. We looked at the higher rice we had produced, which had good grain quality compared to all the cultivars which were known, and we find compared to all the good cultivars, also higher had the least number of chalkiness, is best quality in terms of at least this controlled day-night temperature regime. Okay, now what else does higher do? Higher, we had selected for being a regulator of photosynthesis, photosynthesis as being a key process essentially in the whole system, from production of sugar, carbohydrate, etc. So we had seen with microarray data that the higher lines had increased expression of these genes involved in photosynthesis and carbohydrate metabolism, and that was proven by microarray and qPCR analysis. So then we checked whether higher really regulates them. So we made a higher line, which was tap-tag. That means you have a fusion so that you could pull down the higher protein. We pulled down the higher protein bound to DNA and checked if any of these gene promoters were bound. And what this shows you, that using qPCR, these gene promoters were bound, showing that higher in vivo bound these promoters. And we want to do a transactivation assay to show that actually it was higher doing it and no other genes or proteins involved. So we did a transactivation assay in which we took higher under 35S promoter and took each of these promoters out here in front of a reporter gene luciferase and co-transfected that, and see that actually higher increases the expression of luciferase. That means it is directly regulating this promoter, and therefore with two methods we show that higher is directly involved in the regulation of genes involved in photosynthesis. This just summarizes some of the data which we had in this paper in Nature Communications. It regulates photosynthesis genes directly. It regulates some genes involved in carbon metabolism, some indirectly, goes through transcription factors, other transcription factors, and ARF, WERCI, and it is involved also in heat regulation, some kinases, etc., directly. So either direct or indirectly, higher regulates pathways involved in stress tolerance. Recently, we have taken now this tap-tag line of higher, and we have done ChIP-seq, and we have done RNA-seq analysis of these higher lines. So what we see is that these show that biological categories of genes, of DNA fragments, which are trapped by the higher protein, which is identified by ChIP-seq analysis. And most of the genes, what you see is here, shown the intensity involved in photosynthesis. Some genes are also involved in other side reactions of photosynthesis, but out here. So what are these genes? These are the particular genes. Some of them are chlorophyll AB binding proteins, etc. And so higher potential regulates them. And so we showed that they do really by the similar binding assay. We took higher protein. We challenged them to these promoters and showed that they bound. I won't go into detail with that because I essentially this is in our paper, but this is new data showing that at a global level, higher regulates many of these genes involved in photosynthesis directly or indirectly. So when we get all this information, what do we go for? What we have is now a model in which at least one transcription factor is able to regulate multiple pathways. So here we have our whole regulatory pathway in terms of the networks, and we seed it with the higher and the downstream genes we have identified. So this is higher in the middle. It's very close to a NAC factor, WERCIs, they regulate. And here what we show in green are the ones which we have validated by transactivation in our publications, whereas the other ones we still have to validate. But many of them, the functions are known. So using both the direct evidence, which we have shown before that the tap tag vector does identify the direct bound promoters. Plus the RNA-seq, we then seed a whole network of a higher regulatory network. We ask that, now can we find, can we make a use of this in another stress function? For example, as I said, that higher regulates, it gives you high temperature tolerance under night. So we looked at the starch pathway and this is in developing grain and the transcription factors which are known for that. So this key shows you there are known regulators, predicted regulators, and epigenetic changes caused by histones, starch genes in green, in vegetative source, and blue are in the sink. So this network shows you how the Nippon Bari is under high temperature, the genes which are expressed, for example, which is upregulated, and this is in the higher lines, so genes upregulated by higher under high temperature stress. So what we see is that at some changes, for example, this one comes green, it's from red to green. So there is upregulation of them due to higher, and therefore that's one of the processes which are bolstered, which are affecting it. Very interesting is here there's a transcription factor, RSR1. It's a negative regulator of starch biosynthesis. So RSR1 is here is what you see out here too. It is down-regulated, showing red, but in under higher, the expression is much more stronger down-regulated. So what does it mean? This is a negative regulator which is down-regulated. That means the genes which it was repressing are up-regulated, and that's true. What you see probably what higher goes through a negative regulator and increases the expression of other genes because there is a deregulation of that. So you see a seesaw system in which you have an activator and then a repressor gets downregulated and so it goes on. It's not therefore obvious that something is always goes up. What we did find was higher regulates photosynthesis potentially in higher is differentially regulated in different genotypes. This is a set of genotypes from a population which I'll talk about. This is a subset of them. There is higher increase of expression and some lower expression. We know some downstream genes, so we looked at them too. This is a few downstream genes. This is the higher expression in the different. This is the photosynthesis from the higher photosynthesis in the different genotypes. This is the higher gene expression. Both are shown in green, confusing. And then the targets of them. So what we see are the ones which have high photosynthesis also have increased expression of the higher and potentially also of the downstream genes. We have many more downstream genes to check out. We'd like to see how the pathway is actually present in these ones. But there are other ways to do it, and that's what I'll be coming to. What we also tried to do was try to find out by knockout mutants, which we identified from a large number of TDNA and TOS17 insertions. We screened them for abiotic stress responses under plate screenings and finally for grain yield under drought. So we came to a few genes which have got an altered grain yield under drought. So four of these genes we studied. This was one which we published a while ago. That was a good kinase very early in the pathway. So using two knockout mutants, we find out that actually it's a drought-related gene. In plate screens, you see that it is has sensitivity to NaCl, to PEG and ABA. And in the greenhouse, under vegetative stress response, you see that under drought, the mutant lines shown out here, these two are the mutant lines, compared to the wild type, have got a reduction in biomass, reduction in photosynthesis, reduction in water use efficiency. So these are all characteristics of a drought-tolerant genotype. And then finally, when you look at grain yield, they have a reduction in grain yield too. Interestingly, that even under well-watered condition, this particular kinase has got a reduction in grain yield under normal conditions and also under drought. So genes involved in normal conditions are also involved in stress. So putting all that back into our pathway, so we have higher at the center in which number of downstream regulated transcription factors are there. Good kinase, that was what you saw just before, also regulates photosynthesis because in the mutant we had reduction in photosynthesis. BHLH is another factor which we are finally studying, and heat shock factor also regulate number of biological processes. Some of them are common, many of them are involved in photosynthesis. So this way we try to build up a validated network of genes, transcription factors, downstream biological processes, etc., which could be a model in which you can study other factors. Now, there's a lot of variation in nature. So we were looking at a set of genotypes which have been assembled by the USDA, called the USDA Mini-Core Collection of 220 accessions. So we screened them for a number of factors involved in normal productivity. For example, we screened them for photosynthesis, biomass, and water use efficiency. This is showing you a set of 50 of the genotypes, in which what you see are the percentage reduction in biomass under drought. So some have got high reductions, some have got low reductions. You'd call those ones more tolerant, low reductions. There are different ways, therefore, to identify what are tolerant. Is it reduction in biomass? Is it reduction in photosynthesis? Finally, I'd say it is grain yield, which is important. So we had data now for these. What you see out here under drought stress and well water, the same 50 set of 50 show you high correlation between for these two conditions for photosynthesis. Similarly for water use efficiency and less for biomass. We also have sampled these 220 genotypes in the field 2 years, last year and this year. We are not yet complete with this year's data. So what we have complete from last year data, we see that we have data from about half of them in grain yield under drought. And there's number of components of grain yield. Most important we find is number of fill grains per panicle. So the number of fill grains per panicle has a correlation of 0.8, or square of 0.8 to water use efficiency, which was obtained in pots in the greenhouse. And water use efficiency both under well-watered conditions and under drought stress conditions. So knowing these processes, they are valuable essentially in identifying also traits for fill grains panicle. We looked at then, I'll come to that later. Looking at what the genotypes are, what you see is that in each of those genotypes, there's some examples of them. There's a couple of them from US varieties. This is Aus varieties, and these are Japonica varieties. So under drought stress, you have a reduction here in biomass. And compared to the Nippon Bari, the high reduction in biomass, the low reduction in biomass. So we use these as criteria for giving our genotypes drought stressed or not. We looked at these in terms of gene expression, and what you see is that these varieties, Bengal and Vandana, coming from two different origins, have very different response in terms of the types of response to stress shown in biological processes. So finally, I come down to the screen of these 220 genotypes in the greenhouse for biomass, photosynthesis response, and water use efficiency. We took all that data, and we have now the genome sequence of 202 genotypes to 1.5x and 6 genotypes to 10x. We started a GWAS of it. 174,000 SNPs were called using these maximum missing SNPs of 30% and heterozygosity of 2%. GWAS was done with a TASL pipeline and genetic analysis by GAPIT and compressed MLM. What we see is, for example, in the 12 chromosomes, significant associations for photosynthesis here on chromosome 2 and 12. This under well-watered conditions, and this is also under drought stress, very similar. Goes back to the same thing. The association we had in the well-watered for some genes has also the effect under drought stress. For water use efficiency also, we identified two regions, I think the multiple loci potentially, and they are similarly under drought stress too. So we are now waiting for the validation of these ones. These are SNPs. We can go and identify within genes. They already make a story for us. So in order to get some more support, we have been made a meta-analysis of all what was known in rice in terms of drought-based QTLs. So these are 12 chromosomes, and some of them have water use efficiency, photosynthesis. Now we relate these meta-QTL analysis to what we have identified, and therefore we can look how far different genotypes would be going for the same positions. So that's all I'd like to end with. Thanks to many of my collaborators. I was in Virginia Tech at VBI for a while. A lot of this work started on the thoughtful brains of Arjun Krishnan. He designed most of our networks. Now Chirag Gupta and Ritu Mihani from my group are doing. These are the people involved in Arkansas. My collaborator Niranjan in BISAC in LSU. And each of them have contributed some for physiology and some for bioinformatics by Julie Thomas, Subodh Srivastava. Anuj Kumar's PhD thesis is on the dissertation analysis. I hope you'll see him sometime around here. Thank you for your attention.